our hearts for the occasion on Tuesday, this very significant event of the disappearance of Sri Ishwara Puri. We will be jumping ahead to Madhya Lila Chapter 4. At the conclusion of Mahaprabhu's narration at Ramuna of the glories of Madhavendra Puri, which leads into the pastimes of his very exalted disciple, Sri Ishwara Puri. Mahaprabhu concluded the pastimes between Madhavendra Puri and Gopal, as well as Gopinath, by giving his purport, verse 189 of Madhya 4, to test the intense love of Madhavendra Puri, Gopal ordered him to bring sandalwood from Nilachal. And when Madhavendra Puri passed this examination, the Lord became very merciful to him. For those not familiar with the setting of this pastime, when Gopal, atop on Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan, after being rediscovered by Madhavendra Puri and installed by him, and he also gave initiation to devotees to worship Gopal properly. And Gopal revealed to him that he was still feeling hot, and he desired that Malaya sandalwood to be brought from the Malaya Hills, which means that Madhavendra Puri was being requested by Gopal to walk thousands of kilometers through lands that were at war and territories governed by Mohammedans, Muslims, who were not favorable to Vaishnava sannyasis. So he passed the test by the power of his love for Krishna. And this is Mahaprabhu's conclusion of his narration of the pastime at Ramuna. Such behavior exhibited in loving service between the devotee and the devotee's lovable object, Sri Krishna, is transcendental. It is not possible for a common man to understand. They don't even have the capacity. And then, before narrating the verse which Mahaprabhu recited, echoing Madhavendra Puri's last words in this world, which was actually a recitation of Srimati Radharani's words as Krishna was leaving for Mathura, and her words articulated the sentiments of all the Brijavasis. And before writing that verse, Kaviraj Goswami is giving his introduction. That verse, that famous verse of Madhavendra Puri, originating in the song of Srimati Radharani, is just like the moon. It has spread illumination all over the world. And it's just like that Malaya sandalwood, which Madhavendra Puri was bringing for Gopal from Jagannath Puri. It's like that sandalwood in the sense that the more you rub it, the more its fragrance increases. And similarly, by considering this verse, its significance expands. It's likened to the Kastuba jewel, considered the most precious of all gems. This verse is the best of all mellow poetry. It was spoken by Srimati Radharani herself, and by her mercy only, it was manifest again in the words of Madhavendra Puri. Not only the words, but the mood. Mahaprabhu tasted the poetry of this verse, and no fourth person is capable of understanding it. And this means that the full significance and mood can only be understood by Srimati Radharani, Madhavendra Puri, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Madhavendra Puri recited this verse again and again at the end of his material existence. And uttering this verse, he attained the ultimate goal of life. And then the famous verse itself. O my Lord, O most merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become most unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? And then when Mahaprabhu recited this verse, he fell unconscious and was overwhelmed with ecstatic emotions. Lord Nityananda took Mahaprabhu in his lap, crying. Mahaprabhu then got up again, exhibiting all ecstatic emotions. He began to run here and there while singing and dancing. And he was so choked up, he couldn't even recite the whole verse again. He was simply saying, Aidina, Aidina, repeatedly. He could not speak. His voice was choked up and tears were flowing from his eyes. This verse opened the door of ecstatic love, and when it was exhibited, the servants of Gopinath, there at Ramana Temple, saw Mahaprabhu dance in ecstasy. And then, as a crowd gathered around the Lord, the offering to the deity had just been completed. And when the deities were placed to rest, the priests came out of the temple and offered the pots of sweet rice to Mahaprabhu, the remnants of Gopinath, which was the central figure in the whole story of Madhavendra Puri. These pots of sweet rice were placed before the Lord, which he divided up amongst his devotees. And because Gopinath and Ramana is identical with Mahaprabhu, who is also in Ramana, Gopinath first tasted the sweet rice, and then to manifest the mood of a devotee, Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna, again ate the sweet rice in the mood of a devotee. Now, that verse is the essence of what Madhavendra Puri introduced into the Madhva Sampradaya, at which point the mood of all the acharyas and their followers dramatically changed. Now, you'll hear this same verse echoing in the last words of Sri Ishwara Puri. And that very same mood and the rendition of that verse was what the great Nimai Pandit, it's all he could say after taking initiation from Sri Ishwarapuri in Kumarhat. So that's the background, the glories of Ishwarapuri, who first met Mahaprabhu when the Lord was in his youth during his triumphs of learning as a wrangling smarta and contending nyayak. Ishwarapuri came to Navadvip, where he met Advaitacharya, his godbrother, and Vrindavan Das Thakur describes Ishwarapuri's time in Navadvip when Nimai was still a student. Ishwarapuri came there and spent a few months in the house of Gopinathacharya. And one day he saw Nimai and was most impressed and attracted by his beauty. Nimai invited Ishwarapuri to his house to take prasad. Mother Sachi cooked and served prasadam. Then Nimai and Ishwarapuri began talking about Krishna. Ishwarapuri also met Gadadhar Pandit and was so delighted by the depth of his devotion and renunciation. So Ishwarapuri saw in Gadadhar Pandit the perfect devotee to hear his newly compiled book, Sri Krishna Lilamrita, which he would recite every day at Gopinathacharya's house. And Nimai would come there when Ishwarapuri was reciting his work to Gadadhar Pandit. And accepting Nimai as the greatest pandit, Ishwarapuri asked Nimai to correct any mistakes in his book. And then something very amazing happened, because Nimai at that time had very seldom manifest any outward display of humility. And yet before Ishwarapuri, his future guru, Nimai said, in response to Ishwarapuri's request that he edit his book, quote, this is Nimai speaking, "Anyone who finds any fault with the devotee's description of Krishna is a sinner. If a devotee writes a poem, no matter how poorly done it is, it will certainly contain his love for Krishna. And a fool who criticizes the correct pronunciation of Sanskrit words is wrong, because Krishna accepts the sentiment, whether the pronunciation or grammar is correct or not. If anyone sees a fault in the writings of a devotee, the fault is his, for Krishna is pleased with anything the pure devotee says. You too describe the Lord with words of love." He's talking to Ishwarapuri. "So what arrogant person would dare criticize what you have written?" And then the amazing thing is that after that, Nimai told Ishwarapuri that actually your use of that Sanskrit word was wrong. So you should use this word. And he told him the word he should use that would be correct. Next day, when Nimai came to visit Ishwarapuri, Ishwarapuri told him, now remember, this is the time when nobody could challenge or indicate any fault in anything Nimai Pandit said or wrote. And yet Ishwarapuri told him, and I didn't call my Lord, he said, Nimai, actually you were mistaken. I thought about it, I studied the grammar, and my conclusion is I was right and you were wrong. And Nimai Pandit humbly and happily accepted defeat at the hands of his future guru. Ishwarapuri also met Nityananda Prabhu in the West when he came in contact with Madhavendra Puri. And when Madhavendra Puri and Nitai embraced, they both fainted. And Ishwarapuri was present there, and he could understand that Nityananda was extremely dear to Ishwarapuri. So like his guru's other disciples, he held him in great affection. Now, that was Lord Chaitanya's meeting with Ishwarapuri in Navadvip. And sometime after that, ostensibly to perform the funeral rites for Jagannath Mishra, Nimai, who thus far had been leading the life of an ideal Brahmin householder, is now about to reap its reward in the attainment of spiritual enlightenment, as given in initiation. So, the secondary reason was that at this point in the Lord's Leela, he felt induced to manifest his divine nature in this world out of compassion for the sufferings of his devotees. Seeing the Iron Age too degraded to be redeemed by the efforts of his agents, including Sri Advaitacharya, who is the combined form of Karnadakshaya Vishnu and Sadashiv. Advaitacharya, the cause of the appearance of the Lord, had been unsuccessful in changing the hearts of the stubborn atheists in Navadvip, despite the universal respect he was personally held in all learned circles and amongst brahmanas. In spite of the personal exertions of Advaita and the devotees living in Navadvip, there was no perceptible change for the better in the attitudes of the people towards the Vaishnavas. On the contrary, their hostility continued to increase until it became intolerable to the Lord. And at this time, Nimai, who had been all along totally absorbed in scholastic pursuits, found the grief of his devotees unbearable and moved him to compassion and inspired him to manifest his activity of the savior of the world. But before openly revealing his divine nature, he desired to visit Gaia, as we said, ostensibly for performing the due funeral rites in honor of his departed father, but really for the sake of meeting Sri Ishwarapuri, who he knew in his omniscience was also there. And the Lord left Navadvipa with many of his students, and on this journey sanctified all the country and villages by the touch of his lotus feet. And they journeyed, immersed in delightful talk in all manners, ranging from religion to gossip and humor. And then it was during this journey that the Lord fell apparently ill with a severe fever. And his disciples were very anxious, and they made every effort for curing the disease, which obstinately refused to be cured, such being the will of the Lord. And then the Lord himself prescribed the proper medicine, declaring that drinking the water that has been used in washing the feet of a pure Brahmin relieves one from all suffering. So they brought him that water, he drank it, and his fever was immediately cured. And Vrindavadas Thakur comments that the Veda and Purana bear testimony to the fact that it is the nature of Godhead to drink the water which has washed the feet of his servants. And Vrindavadas Thakur quotes the Gita to substantiate this point, where Krishna says, I serve everyone in the way that he submits to me. Men, O Partha, follow in all cases the lead of my service. So after that, in which Vrindavanas Thakur emphasizes that the Lord's nature is to serve his servants, because he is subdued by his servants. And keep that topic in mind in the weeks approaching Korpanim. And Krishna even prefers that he prefers to be vanquished on this point in order to glorify his devotees, as he did both Bhishma and Arjuna. Krishna thus proved being always ready to obey the will of his devotee, even when it runs contrary to his own. So then the Lord continued his journey and reached Gaia in time, where the lotus feet of Sri Gadadhar were being worshipped by the Brahmanas. And the garlands offered around those lotus feet rose up like a small temple. And the incense, the flowers, the ghee lamps, the clothing, the ornaments offered to those lotus feet was beyond calculation. And those Brahmins, as beautiful celestials, were engaged in reciting the glories of the Lord's lotus feet. Quote, O most fortunate people, behold those feet that are clasped to the chest of the Lord, those lotus feet which are the life of Lakshmi, that manifest on the head of Bali. Behold those feet by whose momentary meditation one is freed from the influence of Yamaraj. And the Brahmins continued, and Nimai was listening. And for practically the first time in his Leela thus far, he became overwhelmed with ecstatic feelings, his eyes filled with tears, and he was trembling. And he began, for the welfare of the world, to manifest symptoms of loving devotion. And those brahmanas who were glorifying the lotus feet of Gadadhar were mesmerized by the wonderful sight of Nimai Pandit for practically the first time in his Leela, revealing the true nature of his heart. And this is the turning point in the Lord's Leela. It's from this point onwards that he appears as the ideal devotee. And that was affected by the meeting with Ishwara Puri that took place right at that time. In the course of his spiritual ecstasies, overhearing the praise of the lotus, the praise of the glories of the lotus feet of Sri Gadadhar, Sri Ishwara Puriya appeared on the scene, apparently coincidentally, but actually by the will of the Lord. And seeing Ishwara Puri, Nimai offered obeisances, and Ishwara Puri, seeing Nimai again, embraced him with great delight. Both of them were drenched with the tears of the other due to the force of the experience of such spiritual joy. And the Lord said to him, "My pilgrimage to Gaya has borne fruit now, inasmuch as I obtained the sight of your lotus feet by offering Pinda Agaya. Only the forefathers are saved from their sufferings. But by the sight of you," this is the Lord glorifying his own servant, Ishwara Puri, "by the sight of you, crores of ancestors are instantly freed from all their sufferings and bondage. And even this Tirtha itself is not equal to you, who are the highest of all Tirthas and the best of all blessings. I beg you to deliver me from the ocean of this worldly sojourn, for which I surrender myself to you here and now. Be pleased to make me drink the nectar of the lotus feet of Krishna. This is the gift for which I pray to you." And Ishwara Puri, very wise, replied, "Listen, Pandit, I now know for certain who you are, Sri Krishna himself. Are scholarship and goodness like they are found in you possible in any mortal being? Possible in anyone who is not at least a portion of the divinity? I've had an auspicious dream of this truth this very day, and I've obtained the fruit of it by seeing you. I tell you truly, Pandit, at the sight of you, I experience the same bliss which never ceases, the same bliss as seeing Krishna. And since beholding your form in Nadia, nothing else has held any attraction for my heart. And this is the truth. I obtain the bliss of beholding Krishna in seeing you." And the Lord simply laughed and replied, "It is I who am most fortunate." The Lord then began the procedure of performing the pinda at the various holy tirthas in Gaya. After which, he took a short rest, and Nimai began to cook his lunch. And just at that point, just when he finished cooking, Ishwarapuri arrived there, chanting Hare Krishna in great loving devotion. Ishwarapuri arrived with tottering steps, and the Lord stopped cooking and with the greatest reverence paid his obeisances to Ishwarapuri and offered him a seat. And Puri laughed, "Listen, Pandit, I see that it is the perfect timing at which I arrived." And the Lord, understanding his intent, said to him, "As the good fortune has manifested itself, may you accept my meal today." And Puri again laughed. He said, "Well, what will you eat if I eat your offering?" And the Lord said, I'll cook again right now." And Puri resisted. "What's the use of cooking again? Just divide your lunch in two and we'll share." And the Lord could not help smiling as he replied, "If indeed you want to have me at all, then accept my offering and I'll cook again in a very short time. Please do not hesitate. Accept my alms." And just then, when the Lord offered his meal to Puri, Ishwarapuri, and prepared to cook again for himself, Ramadevi, Lakshmi, appeared unseen and began to cook for Nimai. As the Lord served Ishwarapuri so tenderly with his own beautiful hands, and Vrindavanadas Thakur concludes that those who hear this narration of the Lord sharing his meal with Ishwarapuri will gain the treasure of love for Krishna. So after finishing his meal, the Lord continued serving Ishwarapuri with a tenderness of love that surpasses the power of description by anyone. And then Lord Chaitanya continued his pilgrimage from Gaya to the birthplace of Ishwarapuri, Kumarhat. And approaching that tirtha, the Lord greeted it with such affection. He said, "I pay my obeisances to Sri Kumarhat, the blessed village in which Sri Ishwarapuri was pleased to appear in this world." Lord Gauranga wept a long time at the sight of the place and could not articulate any sound other than Sri Ishwarapuri. He took some earth from the spot and tied it in his cloth and took it with him, praising that handful of earth. Quote, "This is the birthplace of Sri Ishwarapuri. This earth is my heart's love, my treasure, my life." Unquote. With such intensity, the Lord loves Ishwarapuri and wields all his power to glorify his devotee. And the Lord concluded, "My pilgrimage to Gaya has proved to be fruitful today as I have obtained the sight of Sri Ishwarapuri." And on the next day, the Lord went to Ishwarapuri alone and implored him with the sweetest words for the favor of Diksha. Ishwarapuri said, "It's a small matter to offer you the mantra. I prefer to give you my life." After that, Ishwarapuri gave initiation to Nimai Pandit. And Nimai praised Ishwarapuri as he circumambulated him. "I surrender my heart to you, May you cast your auspicious glance upon me, so that I may be immersed like you in the ocean of love for Krishna. Then Ishwara Puri embraced Nimai, and again they were both drenched in each other's tears. It was shortly after receiving this mantra from Ishwara Puri, who received it from Madhavendra Puri, that the mantra bear an abundant harvest. And it didn't take long. Shortly after initiation, as Nimai Pandit was chanting and meditating on the mantra, the impulse of loving devotion, which had been all along gathering strength in his heart, now burst through all restraints and manifest in this unique external manifestation. Lord Gauranga was heard by his students nearby, crying in a loud voice, reciting verses from Shastra, echoing the words of Srimati Radharani on Krishna's departure from Mathura. O Krishna, O my darling, Sri Hari, my life, where have you gone after stealing my heart? I did indeed attain my Lord, but now where is he gone? And the Lord went on crying and reciting these verses, rolling in the ground, at the top of his voice, crying in the anguish of deep agony. Where, Krishna, have you gone after abandoning me? His great restlessness under the impulse of loving devotion appeared all the more strange because the Lord had formerly been distinguished by the quality of extreme reserve on the subject of religion or devotion. And now he's rolling on the ground, adrift in the ocean of loving separation from himself. All his students ran to the spot, and only after prolonged endeavors and great tender loving care restored him to his normal condition. But the Lord did not change his intention. He told the students, "Now you return to your homes. I have resolved to go to Vrindavan to find Krishna, the Lord of my life." His students appealed to him by every means to dissuade him. But the Lord, deeply immersed in the topmost rasa, could find no rest in his heart. And that night, when everyone was asleep, without their knowledge, he set out for Mathura, drawn by the impulse of love for Krishna, crying out, "O Krishna, my darling, where will I find you? Where have you gone after stealing my heart?" And he proceeded from some distance when he heard a celestial voice addressing him, "Jewel of the twice born, forego your pilgrimage to Vrindavan at this time. There will be a proper time in the future, and you will go there then. For now, retrace your steps to Navadvip. You are the Lord of Sri Vaikuntha," meaning the Yuga avatar, "who has appeared in this world for the deliverance of everyone. And you will freely bestow that treasure of loving devotion by performing kirtan throughout all the world. You have appeared in this world for that purpose, to distribute that treasure of Golok, that mela which even Brahma, Shiva, Sanaka, and their associates find very difficult to achieve themselves. We are your servants, and we speak according to your will. Therefore, having made our submission to you, consider our master, returning to your own home in Navadvipa, you'll come again and reach Vrindavan after some time. And only then did Nimai return to his students for the journey back to Navadvip. So Srila Prabhupada comments on that famous last verse of Madhavendra Puri, because this pastime reveals the essence of the guru-disciple relationship in the dynamics of Krishna consciousness that are extended thereby. So, when Madhavendra Puri, in his last days, was chanting that famous verse, "O my Lord, most merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Bereft of your vision, my heart is unsteady. What